Thank you, TNTs. Well, we are still in our series looking at the story of Ruth in the Old Testament. We have seen what it feels like to be an outsider. We have looked at Boaz as a model of how our church can show the vulnerable and our community extravagant hospitality. Last week, we got to hear Ruth's own powerful voice. The Ruths in our community have something to say to us that we can't hear anywhere else. Last week, I shared a few details about Israelite inheritance, which is still in play this week. We saw that Ruth asked Boaz to be the next of kin, which in the Old Testament means that him marrying her, because she was a widow, and producing an heir to continue the family line, because all of the men had died on that side of the family. But that's only half the story. What people were often more interested in at that time was the land itself, the land that was supposed to be in the family. The text today implies that Naomi's late husband, Elimelech, actually sold his family property before moving to the foreign country of Moab. But since God is the one who parceled it out, it becomes the extended family's duty to go back and buy that land back so it stays in the family. That's another job of the next of kin. That's coming into play this week. And in this week, the next of kin is supposed to buy back the land that Elimelech sold. And if his only duty is also to, you know, marry Naomi, the elderly widow, he doesn't have to worry about there being an heir. But if Ruth comes along with the package and a son is born, then all of the money that he spent on the land and the money to raise this family as his own, it then goes away to this new son that was born. So it kind of comes out of his own pocket. And to put this into modern terms, imagine that you have a brother who is married but doesn't have any children, and your brother dies, leaving a widow. And you decide that your family is going to pay off her mortgage, the entire thing. Just write a check, pay off the entire remainder on their mortgage. This could be like $400,000. When you go home and tell your spouse that you want to do that, is that going to be like a yay conversation? Probably not, right? Because that's coming out of your own pocket. Like that, maybe your own children wouldn't be able to go to college after that. So that's what's at stake with this inheritance this week. And this week we see Boaz. Last week we saw Ruth use her powerful voice, and this week we see Boaz respond. But given the background of what I just shared, the way he does this is fascinating, and it shows us a few important things. Our text today is Boaz speaking with the one man who is a closer relative than he is, and so this man has kind of the right of first refusal over being the next of kin to the land and to Ruth. Listen to how Boaz goes about this in Ruth chapter 4. No sooner had Boaz gone up to the gate and sat down there than the next of kin of whom Boaz had spoken came passing by. So Boaz said, "Come over here, friend, sit down." Always a good start to a conversation. He went over and sat down. Then Boaz took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. He then said to the next of kin, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our kinsman Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me so that I may know, for there is no one prior to you to redeem it, and I come after you." And the next of kin said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz said, "The day you acquire the field from the hand of Naomi, you are also acquiring Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead man, to maintain the dead man's name on his inheritance." At this, the next of kin said, "I cannot redeem it for myself without damaging my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, one took off a sandal and gave it to the other. In this way, the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the next of kin said to Boaz, "Acquire it for yourself," he took off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have acquired from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, all that belonged to his sons Chilion and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, the wife of Mahlon, to be my wife, to maintain the dead man's name on his inheritance. in order that the name of the dead may not be cut off from his kindred in the gate of his native place. Today you are witnesses. Then all the people who were at the gate, along with the elders, said, "We are witnesses. And may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you produce children in Ephrathah and bestow a name in Bethlehem, and throughout the children that the Lord will give you by this young woman, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." This is the word of the Lord. So thanks be to God. I was talking with one of our staff members this week, and I don't know how we got here, but somehow we started talking about gym class. And she could still viscerally remember with terror gym class when she was in kindergarten. One of the challenges in her gym class was to climb this wooden pole, and try as she might, she could never reach the top. And so watching all the other kids scurry on up the pole and looking at the disappointed look on her teacher's face, she felt unworthy and ashamed. Another church member shared that he was always one of the smallest kids in his class. He was one of the only ones from another place. He didn't look like everyone else. He certainly didn't talk like everyone else. And that made him a natural target. But he came up with an ingenious solution, if you ask me, for how to handle being the smallest and being a natural target. He earned a reputation as a biter. You're going to think carefully before you fight that kid, right? But he had to do it because everyone else was just lining up to tell him he was unworthy. Have you ever felt unworthy? Or maybe you've thought, you know, I'm okay, but I'd be great if I lost 15 pounds. Or if I could just stop drinking as much. Or if this person would love me. Or I'd be great if I could kick this habit. Or maybe read more this year. Ever had negative thoughts when swimsuit season is approaching? Ever been worried when you're going back to a high school reunion? What will people think? Ever messed up at work or at home? Have you ever felt unworthy? There's a story from the early days of IBM, and the CEO brought in an employee to his office, and the employee had just made a monumental blunder that had cost the company $600,000 in 1940s dollars. That's worth a lot today. And can you imagine what the employee was feeling? This wasn't just like going to the principal's office because you've been tardy too many times. This could cost him his entire career. Who would ever hire him again? Do you think he felt worthy at that moment? Well, apparently Thomas John Watson, the CEO of IBM at the time, did think he was worthy. He recounted that people asked him, "Why didn't you fire this man?" He said, "I just spent $600,000 training him. Why would I want someone else to hire that experience?" Looking at our sense of worthiness, whether it's, you know, gym class all the way up to the CEO's office, I think we see a few different aspects are in play in the story of Ruth and in our lives as well. In Ruth's story, we have seen her evolve a lot over the last 3 weeks. At first, she was a dependent widow in chapter 1. She learned to care for herself and her mother-in-law in chapter 2, but remember, she still called herself the foreigner whenever Boaz talked with her. In chapter 3, last week, she was suddenly bold enough to ask Boaz to marry her and to consider her worthy of all the protections an Israelite widow would receive, no longer the foreigner. I believe she went from feeling like an unworthy outsider to feeling like a worthy woman, which is what Boaz called her. Brené Brown, a professor and researcher at University of Houston, who also has an amazing TED Talk, if you're into that thing, in her research, she found that the number one thing that separates us from love and connection that we want and need, the number one thing, it's not smartphones preventing us from talking with each other. It's not the internet. It's not a sudden moral decay, indecency. Number one thing preventing us from experiencing the love and connection that we want and need is the fear that we don't deserve it. The fear that we are unworthy of love and connection. That's number one. Ruth is the story of a widow caring for another widow who needs to find her place. Ruth is the story of a foreigner who needs to find acceptance. And as we see Ruth's story, her story unfolds and progresses as she begins to see herself as a worthy woman. Her story progresses as she claims her place in this society, not just listening to what everyone else tells her she belongs. Her story progresses as she comes to believe that she is worthy of love and connection. But what's interesting is that she makes this transition even though her circumstances haven't changed. Until we reach the end of this chapter, she is still a foreign-born widow. So what changed? Why did she suddenly feel worthy if her circumstances had not changed? Well, that's one of the great things about a sense of worthiness, that sense that you deserve love and connection. It's not based on changing your reality. Worthiness doesn't require losing 15 pounds or looking better in that swimsuit. Worthiness doesn't require getting that promotion or the new title or getting into that honor society or receiving that scholarship. Ruth was a worthy woman even when she was a foreign-born widow. She didn't need to marry Boaz to become worthy. She was worthy of love and connection just as she was. But don't get me wrong, she got a nice upgrade at the end of this chapter, don't get me wrong, but she still would have been worthy of love and connection even if this had fallen all apart. That sense of worthiness is a choice, not a circumstance. It is a decision, not something you earn. And that should resonate with us as followers of Christ. Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 2, God saved you by his grace when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It is a gift from God. Salvation is not a reward for the good things you've done. So none of us can boast about it. We are all worthy of love and connection simply because we are children of God. Nothing more is needed. Switching that mindset is the number one thing we can do to find the love and connection we want and need. Ruth's path to joy started with her decision to say, I am enough and I am worthy. And that's something that happens today, not as long as these things happen. When you believe I am enough, that is your ticket to joy in this life. I am enough is the ticket to love and connection. That's what we see in Ruth's story. So do you believe that you are worthy? Do you believe that you are enough right now? Do you believe that if you're good enough for Jesus, you're good enough for other people too? It's true. Now maybe you're hearing that and you're like, yeah, old hat. I've already claimed my worthiness. I believe I'm a child of God. I am worthy of love and connection. If you're already there, if you've already claimed your worthiness, another thing we see in this story, we see it from Boaz, is how can you help someone else claim that worthiness as well? We saw Boaz a couple of weeks ago. He showed Ruth that extravagant hospitality, and he's the first one to call her a worthy woman. This week he goes a step further, though, as he tries to get the rest of the community to acknowledge that as well. He does things very peculiarly. The first thing he does that's peculiar is he waits until the town elders are there to have this conversation with the next of kin. That's not required. That's not a part of the law. But he does it to make sure there are witnesses, to make sure there's broad community support. Second, did you notice how he phrased this? Because he first just talks about the land. And the guy says, oh yeah, I'll take the land. No inheritance, that's going to stay with my family. Oh yeah, bring it on. And then he says, oh wait, now there's Ruth too. And that's when the guy backs out. I think there's a couple of reasons he does it this way. First, I think he wanted to make sure that the next of kin was actually interested in performing his duty, not just an economic advantage for his family. Second, I believe Boaz was showing the town elders that he valued Ruth, that he said she's a part of this promise, a part of this covenant, not just the land. By demonstrating that this other next of kin just wanted the land, but that he saw Ruth as a worthy woman, he got their endorsement. And they made sure the community bought in as well. And it absolutely worked. If you notice at the end of this, the town elders pronounce a blessing upon what Boaz is doing. They buy in. But notice, they don't bless Boaz. They actually ask for God to bless Ruth. And in this blessing, They highlighted one of Boaz's ancestors, Perez. All of you know the story of Perez, right? Yeah, didn't think so. Only the people who did the Genesis Bible study, you might remember Tamar. The circumstances behind Perez's birth were very unorthodox and morally strained, if you want to look at that in the Old Testament. But they lift out this person from Boaz's history who was born because of some next of kin decisions, just like Ruth is doing now. They acknowledge through this ancestor of Boaz's that Ruth is now a part of us. Ruth, the outsider, is now Ruth, the worthy woman. That's what that blessing means. Now, looking at Boaz, I think we see two ways that we can help others claim their worth, their sense of worth, that they deserve love and connection. First off, we can demonstrate that they are worth something to us, like Boaz did in the fields 2 weeks ago. And second, we can help the community show that they are worthy, just like Boaz did today with the elders. Sisters and brothers, Ruth's story shows how one foreign-born widow claimed her place and her worth in society, and how that society embraced her as well. Ruth is the story of a woman who recognized that she was a child of God just like everyone else around her, regardless of the country she was born in, and that was enough. And Ruth is the story of a man as well, in Boaz, who saw her worth, helped everyone else see it too. So where are you in this story? Are you like Ruth, needing to claim your worth in the eyes of God, to claim your worth in the eyes of other people, to realize that you are enough? Not just after you lose 15 pounds, you are worth enough today. Or are you more like Boaz? You've claimed your worth, but you might be able to help someone else claim that for themselves. Sisters and brothers, you are enough. You are worthy of love and connection, period. No contingencies on that house sale. Simply because God made you. That's enough. Thanks be to God. Amen.